I guess questions during it would probably fill up time better.
Interesting. Yeah. There's a tendency for speakers to get quieter as they talk.
Okay. So well, now I get louder.
Good. Get louder.
Hi, I'm Trish. George so eloquently introduced me. I've got an interesting history in that I've actually come from several well-known well-known jobs, and I've been fairly well-known in what I've done over the past 6 to 7 years. As George said, he was actually IPFW bridging firewalls in front of Slashdot in 2000 after we rebuilt their network. We brought it up, we got DOSed almost immediately, and within a couple hours I had been convinced to put 2 FreeBSD boxes in front of a network full of machines owned by VA Linux, which is pretty funny. But a couple years later I ended up working for ABC in New York City. We were doing interactive television, and it was actually the first that I had been introduced to Java application platforms on a rather heavily used basis. At the time, we were using Tomcat. They were using Linux at the time, and they really needed some oomph in what they were doing. And I knew, because of my work with FreeBSD, I knew how to get the most out of the operating system. And the network stack, and so essentially I proposed the idea of using Java or moving Tomcat to FreeBSD, knowing that there might be a few idiosyncrasies there with what at the time was a very, very new Java port to FreeBSD. In fact, I think at the time the only Java VM that was available was either Java 1.2 or 1.3. I think 1.3 was the first port. So, and we had started out using Linux compatibility and running it on there, and then moved to the actual native Java port after it finally was stable enough to use. And that wasn't a painful experience at all. In fact, it was rather easy. We're only doing it on 3 boxes. So it wasn't like a huge production environment, but we were getting a lot of hits. And it just, to me, seemed like I was just essentially tuning a Linux box and Tomcat and Apache, and, you know, it was sort of normal for me in that case. But I ended up at a company, I ended up at a company called Paltalk, and Paltalk had an interesting dilemma. I don't know how many people are familiar with IRC and how IRC works and essentially how people get pissed off on IRC and people start attacking IRC boxes. And what ends up happening is you get these huge denial of service attacks. Well, I moved to this company, Paltalk, PowerPoint presentation here. Let's see. Here we go. And Paltalk was sort of like IRC in the fact that it was the largest commercial instant chat platform. We had 3.8 million active members online. That didn't mean they were all online at the same time, but it meant we had a fair amount of people, 2 data centers, and over 80, actually at the time they were not FreeBSD machines, they were Linux boxes. And they were running this voice and video multiplexer on Java. And we were getting hit, and the boxes were falling over, and we were constantly propping them back up and everything else. And I said, you know something? I said, I've used the Java before on FreeBSD. It wasn't in such a large situation, but it worked. Why don't we try and use it here? And essentially, I got the go-ahead to build a couple boxes at Paltalk. So now we have 80 of these boxes, and we're still building more. In fact, I've got 10 more to build this week, and they're working very, very well, and here's why. Well, first, we've all gone through this. Why FreeBSD over, say, Linux? One, we've got the security, the stability, better network performance. Second, I was an expert in it, a little more than I was Linux. And FreeBSD had certain denial of service mitigation that served us with essentially what was a safe zone. We could limit the amount of resets sent. We could limit the amount of ICMP that we responded to or even paid attention to at all. What's that? For what?
Kernel
hack. Oh, yeah. The ease of use of IPFW was a definite as compared to NetFilter and IP chains and the things that keep on changing throughout the years in Linux. They didn't seem to be able to settle on one syntax or one, and it just became very confusing. And at least we had a pretty good idea of how to use IPFW very easily. So why did we use Java? Well, we really didn't have much of a choice. Everything was already written in Java, and we didn't want to rewrite everything else. And Linux and Windows didn't give us the stability and security that we needed. So in order to use the Java code, we decided to try and use Java on FreeBSD, knowing that there might be some bugs, some idiosyncrasies, some issues. And where I said before, where Tomcat wasn't that painful, this was a little more painful. We actually had to really do a lot of research and learn where we needed to tune and how we needed to change kernel parameters and everything else in order to make it work efficiently on FreeBSD for the type of volume that we were doing and the type of network volume that we were doing. The greatest thing is that I've already got all this down for you. Yeah, if you want to use Java on FreeBSD, well, you don't have to learn as much as I did, which is really nice. First things, Java on FreeBSD is very different than Java anywhere else. I mean, once it's running, it's fine, but getting it going is very different. Number one, there's no binary package because the license doesn't allow for distribution of a binary package. So therefore, you have to compile it from source, which luckily we've got the port system, right? So you've got to build it from source port. You have to have these dependencies on the system. Unfortunately, there's really no way around that. And things that I normally would not have on a server system like the Xorg libraries, unfortunately, in this case, it would have taken some major work in order to get that out of the Java port. And in order to install the package, we need stuff like that, like gtk and things that were meant primarily for graphical applications. It just made it easier for us. It wasn't hurting anything, and these boxes are pretty lockdown tight, so I'm not worried too much about it. It requires some pretty major tuning to be reliable and stable. You have to tune max users, the amount of memory clusters available to networking if you're going to use it for networking applications. Max files is very, very important. For some reason, I think it's some threading specific issues, that the amount of open files on a FreeBSD box running Java seems to be a lot more. If you count the amount of open files, there's a lot more open on FreeBSD than there is on Linux. This caused some issues at first where we had servers dying for no apparent reason because they just couldn't open enough files in order to run correctly. So we increased that. If you're using FreeBSD 6, native threads work really well now. In fact, I would almost suggest going with FreeBSD 6 if you're going to run some heavy Java. At this point, I know that it's not as tested as FreeBSD 5, but it seems to be, we're running it in production for a while now, and it seems to be very stable for us. Always make sure that shared memory is only using physical RAM. That's very important. so that you're not paging out any of the memory that, that Java is using as shared memory. This also ran us into some problems where we were noticing some appreciable slowdowns after a while. It wasn't right away, and we were going, what the hell is going on here? And we did a little research and figured out that's what you have to do. So, and does anybody have any questions up to this point? Because, you know, I'm speeding through this. Green threads are something that was on the early Javas, Java VMs, in which they had their own little threading system. It was an internal threading system to Java rather than using the native threads in the system. Now, one of the reasons this was important is because originally Linux didn't have decent threading support once upon a time. FreeBSD definitely didn't have decent threading support once upon a time. What's that? Yes. So essentially, you know, you could use Java's internal threading, or you could use the threading of the operating system and the lightweight process system of the operating system. Because of this, essentially, what we found out is that, like on FreeBSD 5, we were better off going with earlier Java VMs that supported green threads, because the threading support on FreeBSD 5 and earlier was not as good as FreeBSD 6. Yeah, I probably would not do that. We've had. What's that?
Repeat the question.
You said so. Probably would not use the OS level threading support on anything up until FreeBSD 6. On FreeBSD 5, you know. So essentially, that also locks you out of using Java 1.4 and 1.5 because they don't support that. They don't support green threads. Yeah, actually, I'm gonna put it up on my website, and then I'll send out a mail to the unless you want, you know. But are you on the user group list? Or yeah, then I'll send out a mail to the user group list. The slides will all be available. All the little stuff that I've done, you know, this is it's a pool of information. So. Anything else? So we ran into the question then about if we could only do this, if we had to compile this from source, how did we deploy it elsewhere? Well, we were lucky in that you could make a package out of it. And we made a package out of every single one of the dependencies. And we would sync that out and then script the package ads for everything. And all the stuff we needed to put in loader.conf and syscontrol.conf and everything else all got synced out as well. Of course, if you put something in loader.conf, you got to reboot the one true Windows way. Of course, it's not Windows, but unfortunately, sometimes you got to do that. And then those became the defaults on the system, so it essentially, you know, that just implies that you maybe don't know some of that, but if more experienced people understand that. So the biggest thing, and I guess what I went through, and we can actually discuss this a bit, was I went through a lot of issues with getting it to work properly. And I guess in a lot of ways, questions are really welcome around this time. One is that when I started troubleshooting, one of the things I realized is that if I just ran it, it didn't work. I realized that a lot of the tunings that I had to deal with were things that I would have normally had to deal with when dealing with applications on a FreeBSD box anyway that were network intensive. In fact, a lot of the stuff that I worked with, and I'm talking specifically with PalTalk here, because we're dealing with a lot of network multiplexing and a lot of network performance issues, a lot of these things are things that you would have done, say you were running a heavily used IRC server. And I had to make sure those things were in there first, that the performance of the machine and the network stack was the best it could be, so that I wasn't blaming Java for things that may not be Java's fault. That's just a warning in that, you know, think of something that may be very similar and make sure that the system is tuned to run that first, before you start blaming the VM. The VM has its own set of issues, but a lot of the network stuff isn't one of them. It seems to run network level code very, very well. Especially we're running Java 1.3 on the FreeBSD 5 boxes, and it works fine. And on the FreeBSD 6 boxes, we've had no problems with Java 1.4. You could try a different version or patch level. Like I said, we've tried 1.4, 1.5, 1.3 on various boxes to see what we got the best performance out of for what we were doing specifically. It's a fairly active project. A lot of bugs are fixed. Sometimes in fixing bugs, they introduce new bugs. And because Java is such a complex piece of code, sometimes, you know, going back a patch level or whatever it needs to be done. Now, this is a very painful process, and I'll explain why. In order to do this, you have to roll back the Java port, roll back the patch, and recompile everything. It's not fun. It's time-consuming. It, depending on how fast your machines are, it can take till the next day to recompile Java. On the faster machines, you know, we're using dual 2.4 gigahertz machines. We rebuild it in about 6 hours. Like, you know, and this, so of course, the time is adjusted as per how much memory you have and how much, you know. We've actually found that FreeBSD 6, God bless them, seems to work much faster. In compiling software. I think a lot of people have noticed that. I've seen people on the list mention that Make World seemed to go a little bit faster on FreeBSD 6. This is great when you're dealing with recompiling Java over and over again. When all else fails, and you want to get the benefits of FreeBSD as an operating system over Linux or Windows, and you still want to run Java on it, you can always fall back to Linux compatibility. In fact, I had to do that because I built a couple Macromedia JRun boxes, and JRun only runs on Linux. It runs on FreeBSD under Linux compatibility mode, but it needed to load the Linux Java VM, so I had to run it. Like, there was no other choice. But I reaped the benefits of having FreeBSD and being able to tune the network stack and being able to do everything that I do with FreeBSD and get that performance increase and still use the Linux code. So you can always do that. Does anybody have any questions about that kind of stuff? I'm like burning through this, George. What's that? What are some of the Linux compatibility caveats? When you're dealing with Linux compatibility, some stuff is not going to work. Or you're going to have to do a lot of loading of Linux libraries and, you know, getting RPMs and things like that to even get it to work. For example, and this has nothing to do with Java, but a while ago, a lot of us were trying to run Quake 2 on FreeBSD. Using the GL libraries through Linux compatibility. It took a little work, but it could be done. the kind of caveats you got to remember is that you almost have to replicate the entire environment that you would need on Linux in FreeBSD, including sometimes you have to add support for time clocks, things like that proc file system, Linux proc file system, things that could theoretically open you up to some issues, security things and whatnot. Just those are the types of caveats that you have to remember is that when you start doing that, yes, you're using FreeBSD, but you're essentially replicating a Linux environment on FreeBSD. You're loading Linux libraries, you're loading, and you're running through that compatibility system in which you pretty much, you're installing Linux software, it's all the same things that you deal with Linux, plus some of the complexities of dealing with the binary translation and how system calls are translated to FreeBSD. Not every system call is translated cleanly or works. Most of them do, and I can't think of any offhand that right now are like glaring in my mind because I haven't used it in a while except for this. But there are some. These are very much for network. We talked about the shared memory thing, which is the first one. Make sure that shared memory never gets swapped out. It stays only using physical RAM on the machine. As far as the other stuff, these are TCP values that are more... they're more tuned to network performance. So essentially, the amount of memory that we allocate to certain TCP values, essentially window sizes, things like that. We have, and a lot of these I'd actually have to go back and see exactly what they did specifically, which I could do. That's the one I have to go back and look up. There's a... I'm trying to remember the very specific idea behind it. We can find out. We can go look it up, actually. In flight? There was a specific reason I used it, and I knew it at the time, but I can't remember now. What's that? Yeah. You know. And a lot of it was like, you know, max files we increased because Java used opened more files than we expected. And actually that value was, we actually kept increasing it to the point where we weren't using up all the memory the machine had by opening files and files and files and essentially fork bombing it, but we were also... arrived at a level by increasing and increasing and increasing until we actually got a number that worked.
From the files, the reason why,
you know, I didn't have a chance to really go into it and see, but it's the amount of shared libraries that it opens, the amount of exactly the amount of requests that people make to the machine is another one of them. And if they open a file per connection, plus they're opening another file and another file and another file, I'm not so intimately familiar with the Java code as much as I am the environment that it runs in, that I couldn't tell you exactly what they're doing specifically, but all I know is it does act differently on FreeBSD than it does on Linux. Yeah, there are a lot of shared, but a lot of it is pipes and socket connections. So, you know, and I'm not sure whether there's something different about how Java opens. I definitely know it's not using KQ at all, unfortunately. Later on, later versions do use KQ.
Later versions.
1.4, 1.5 on FreeBSD do use KQ. Yes, actually, these are for 6.0. We use this on 6.0, but I haven't tested going back down. That would be interesting, actually, and I should try that on one of the 6.0 boxes. But yeah, on 5, forget it. There's no way you can't do that. Yeah. And the polling enable is, and actually I can explain it, down at the bottom of the, down here, some of the options that we're using. This is just a recount of what I have enabled. And
there's no polling enabled option.
Is it really now?
You don't need the option. And
really?
The system call option is obsolete.
But you still need to put it in the kernel.
Config.
Oh, really? Nice. Essentially, this was because we were having some network performance issues that we needed to tune out. So, what's up, George?
Yeah, you made the case for running on the basis of networking versus Linux.
Yes.
That all makes sense to deal with DDoS and stuff like that.
Yes.
But what about running the JavaScript for?
You know, Java actually runs hotter on FreeBSD.
Yes.
Well, we were running Linux 2.4 kernels, and actually, it's really interesting because the CPU usage of Java on FreeBSD is a lot higher, is much higher by double. The thing is that that's also going by statistics off of the FreeBSD box, and the way it gathers those statistics may be very, very different. But we have noticed it does run a lot hotter. The memory usage is about the same. And FreeBSD 6, it runs cooler than FreeBSD 5. So. No, we're not running it inside an app server right now. It's a Java VM running a very specific application. Like I said, it's actually really interesting because running it, say, in Tomcat is actually fairly trivial these days on FreeBSD. A lot of the stuff you're going to do with Tomcat, with JSP and whatnot, is not overly intensive. This was dealing with a very intensive application on boxes that were built to handle the intensive application. This was very specifically, like I said, network application level stuff. Not yet. I've been so busy building these things that I haven't had a chance to really go back and say, this is what we're seeing as it's different than how it performs on Linux or Solaris. Not yet. And what's really funny is I've only been doing this particular thing in the last couple months, last 3 months or so. Before that, I was dealing with primarily, it was funny because we were moving our web servers to FreeBSD, and I had to deal with the app server issues. And running JRun under Linux compatibility and things like that. Now, it's interesting to note that the Linux Java VM under FreeBSD still runs just as hot. So I'm not sure why, but it's something very specifically with how FreeBSD handles these things. It may be I don't know. I'd have to actually trace the entire thing in depth, which I could do, but I haven't had a lot of time to do. Most of my time is spent getting it working rather than tracing why. Same exact hardware running. In fact, it was very simply wiping Linux, installing FreeBSD, there was no difference in hardware whatsoever. The ones that we're using are, they've got 2 gigs of RAM, they're 2.4 gigahertz, dual 2.4 gigahertz boxes. We are experimenting with hyperthreading on and off on some boxes. I'm waiting for feedback from the developers on which is getting better performance. Pretty much, most of them are Dell boxes. The 6.0 boxes are all HPs. They're DL340s or something like that. The reason we went to 6.0 originally was that for some reason 5.0 would not, or 5X would not boot on those boxes. There was something with the HP BIOS that FreeBSD 5 would not boot at all on them. So we actually were running on betas, 6.0 betas for a while, and the betas had too many issues and we couldn't use these boxes at all. And then when the release came out, we upgraded and they worked, which was very interesting. I have a feeling that a lot of it was a lot of the bugs that they fixed in threading and whatnot were all very specific to what we were doing.
I see you have the ULE scheduler
enabled. Yeah, we've actually noticed we're getting better performance with ULE than we were with
Flippy.
Oh, yeah. It definitely works. We've seen appreciable difference in performance between the two. And this is on 6.7. Yeah, it's pretty safe. I mean, we've had these boxes running for weeks now, and nothing, you know, no crashes, no nothing. So the caveat is we're doing something very specific on these boxes, and I don't know, you could tip off something that causes it to come tumbling down, but, you know, these things are being used rather intensely. I mean, they're multiplexing video, you know, and not just that, but they're also, as the video comes in, they're changing the encoding of the video. So it's, you know, they're not doing nothing. I mean, they're very intensive applications. Like what type are you? Yeah, those are some of the major ones that we found. A lot of it was stuff that was mitigated by performance tuning of the machine itself. That it wasn't so much the Java VM as much as you really need to know how to tune the machine for the application. So the major things that we've seen are just that it seems to run a lot hotter. You know, otherwise, Java seems very stable on FreeBSD. In fact, in some ways, I've seen less crashes on the FreeBSD boxes than we were seeing on the Linux boxes, even though, and we figured, you know, it's worth the trade-off. You know, to have it more stable, it was worth the trade-off of the CPU usage, even if we have to run a few less multiplexers on the box, which we've had to do. We've had to actually cut the amount of processes running. Anything else? No, go ahead.
No, I was also wondering about,
There were a couple reasons. One was on 5, on FreeBSD 5, which is what we were originally running on. We had to use the green threads, and it's not available in 1.4 and 1.5. There was really no way around it. The threading on FreeBSD 5, for lack of a better word, sucked, sort of like FreeBSD 4 and 3, and, you know. So essentially, going to FreeBSD 6, it freed us up to even update the Java VM, which was nice. And on our 6 boxes, we're running 1.4. You know, I thought about it, and I haven't had a chance yet. I've got a lot of plans to really play with this as soon as a lot of the other projects that I have to get done are done. I'm pretty much running the systems operations over at Paltalk right now, and that leaves a very minuscule amount of time to experiment at this point. When it was a priority to experiment, they let me. Once it got working, they haven't let me go back and do it yet. So, but it would be something interesting. In fact, maybe if I have some time at home, I'll simulate the environment and try some of the other Java flavors out there. I did look into it when I was playing with all this stuff, trying to get it working, because we really, really needed FreeBSD. I mean, or any flavor BSD over what we had, because it was a real issue. There were routing cache issues on Linux that were causing the machines to crash, and they were using, there was reasons they were using it, and it was, you know, essentially FreeBSD just handled everything better. In fact, it was really funny because the CTO came back to me a few weeks later and said, "Wow, because you know something? Linux is a child's toy compared to this." And that was probably the biggest validation for what I had just done in bringing FreeBSD into the company. Which, you know, I've had that happen before at ABC and at VA, and, you know, so, but I was used to it, but it was still very nice to hear, you know.
Yeah.
You had another question, or?
Are you still using IPFW?
Yes. I like IPFW. I'm not a PF person. Sorry. You know. You know what's very strange about me is that I have this, I experiment a lot, but in some ways I'm very set in my ways, and if I'm not noticing that I'm getting bad performance out of it, why change?
Your operating system's like 25, 30 years old now.
Yeah, exactly, you know. The other thing is IPFW has worked in very high volume situations for me. And I haven't had any major issues with it. You know, why change? It's like SendMail for me. You know, I haven't had issues with SendMail. I also know CF like the back of my hand, and I could probably write it in my sleep. So, you know, I still use SendMail. Where if I didn't, maybe I would still be using, or maybe I would be using PostFix and some of this other stuff. It's really nice, and I would completely agree that it's nice, but, you know. Yeah, which is why I said that we're starting to move forward now. With the introduction of FreeBSD 6, that, like I said, it freed us up a lot. We now have the performance benefits of FreeBSD in the network environment. Plus, we now have we have threads that work. Wow. You know, God, we've waited how long for that? I remember back in, sitting at Usenix with a bunch of people on the FreeBSD development team discussing that, you know, we're really going to fix this thread thing now. And how long did it take from then, which was 1998, 99, and then, you know, so... I don't know. You know, it makes a huge difference in stuff like this. Especially when you're running Java and even with other applications that are thread dependent. And let's face it, you get a performance increase out of it when they work correctly, you know. Why not use them? No, not yet. We're just using the KSE threads right now. So.
The other library is the same one as Dragonfly.
Oh, really? Yeah, I have not tried it because KSE was working very well. So I figured to stick with it. And then we found something that actually worked, finally, you know. Anything else? What time is it? 10 to 7? How are we doing? Is that... Anybody else have any questions? Yeah, how about in general? I mean, you know. I mean, if you guys don't have any more questions about this, then we can go on to...
Anybody else in production running it?
You know, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to check and see.
Is there a Java list on FreeBSD?
No, we should... Yeah, there is, actually. There's a FreeBSD Java list.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't think it has a list of people running it. I do know that ABC is using it for because I was there. So ABC is using it for interactive television platforms. And they're using... That's an application platform. That's Tomcat. Actually, I think they're running a Java application even behind it that's not run under Tomcat, that's working very well.
What about client performance? I mean, I was asking about server loads and so on before memory switch and everything, but what about on a client? I mean, how does it look?
Actually, it's
I mean, number of connections higher? I mean, what is...
Well, on the client end, they don't see any difference, on, or at least from the PalTalk client end.
Number of clients?
So we can handle more clients now, only because we're not crashing all the time.
Does that matter here? Where's that thing?
But, I mean, we can handle a lot more clients now, and we're dealing with, from the moment we put FreeBSD into production with the same code that we were using on Linux, we saw a 40% increase in the amount of frames that we're processing through. So that, I mean, with the CPU increase also comes a performance increase in how the code works. So, you know, it's really worth it, you know. We may have had to cut down on the amount of processes running, but that's probably because the processes are performing a lot better. Because we're getting better performance out of the machines.
A little bit of a tangent from there, but what about capacity? Like, what do you have, like, a whole set of file servers, a whole set of video servers? Is there an intercommunication going on between them? I mean, what do you... tell us about this part.
Okay. I don't know how much I can tell you without giving up proprietary information here. Essentially, what we've got is... It's similar to IRC in some senses, and it's completely different in others. So if you're familiar with typical IRC topography, you've got a bunch of chat servers that talk to each other and relay messages back and forth. Well, we do that. We relay text messaging back and forth, just like an IRC server, an IRC channel, and one-to-one messaging. But then we do also voice, which is all handled completely separately. There's a whole different cluster of machines that handles voice. Now, what happens is the chat server, which we call the protocol server, then tells the client which voice machine to connect to get the voice for that group, for that room, that chat room. Any one of these chat rooms, but essentially there's a one-to-one relationship between a chat room with voice and the clients on it. Essentially, it's, you know, you've got 20 machines. The voice stuff does not run across servers, so you can't cluster one group. That's coming, but so you can see that we actually have to do a lot of processing on each machine in order to make it work correctly, because we've got no way of relaying voice through other places.
For redundancy, or...
No, we've got plenty of redundancy. If one goes, if it goes down, it opens it up to on a different machine. But as far as processing the voice is concerned, two machines will not process the same voice group at the same time. And with video, it's even different because now it's per person. It's per camera. So you connect to the machine that the camera's on. Even if they're in the same group, one person with a camera will be on a different machine than another person with a camera. It's pretty random where they get allocated. It's all according to an algorithm that's, you know, tells us which machine is loaded the most, and it'll go to the one least loaded, you know. So, It's pretty neat. If you guys have a chance to check it out, unfortunately you need Windows to see it. But if there's enough demand for it in the future, they've been pretty open to my whining for a Mac client for us. You know, they would love to do it. The money's just not there right now. So, you know, if anybody wants to start pummeling us with the emails, you know, go ahead. but it's really neat in that the frame rate is 12 frames per second on the video. So we do some pretty major, you know. The only thing that we don't have, and it's due out in 9.0, is synchronized voice to video. The reason is because we haven't needed it up till now, and it's not one to one; it's group. So you're not really always the person who's on video is not always talking, nor is that voice channel always there for that person. So to synchronize voice to video, but they're working on ways to do a one to one, sort of like iChat. Has the voice and the, you know, the synchronization and everything else. That's all being worked on. It's not something that is widely used right now for our specific platform. So, but the network topology is very interesting in that way, and we've got all kinds of different network hardware devices and things like that. And there's, of course, there's the, you know, FreeBSD IPFW boxes going in as bridges so that we can dynamically, there's a thing called a Packeteer. I don't know if you've heard of them. Packeteer does sort of like quality of service stuff, but one of the neat things that they do is they analyze traffic flows, and their machine understands Python. So essentially we can write stuff in Python so that it'll communicate with our IPFW box on the same network and essentially add rules if we see a flow is starting to look like a denial of service attack. So, we don't, and see, the thing is that it's got to be very dynamic. And so we need intelligent quality of service stuff rather than static. So it's very difficult to say. Essentially, with all queue, it would be very difficult for us to define what denial of service looks like because it's different every time. So, oh yeah, but we still need the external logic. So this is more to firewall it off. So because the Packeteer can actually adjust its flows, so we're not worried about that. We're worried about what happens when we want to turn somebody off completely.
So firewall.
Yes. So, and that's why we do that. But, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that we're doing, and a lot of it has started to come about because we introduced FreeBSD to our environment, where a lot of, you know, they were very limited in what they did with Linux. What's up, Mike? It was actually interesting. They were very, I wouldn't say, they weren't hostile, but it was a matter of, we actually had a problem getting Linux on a few of the Dell boxes that were over there because of a driver issue with the, and we didn't want to pay for the, pay for Enterprise Linux in order to get the driver. So I said, hey, why don't we try throwing FreeBSD on it? And they said, okay, you know, we'll see if it works, you know. And all of a sudden they realized that it was working better. And so I got my way. But that's not always how it happens. I mean, at VA, there was almost a hostility to it up until, you know, they were able, yeah, right, up until they were able to turn it into a big publicity stunt on Slashdot. And then they loved it, you know. But, you know, at first they're like, I can't believe you're putting FreeBSD in front of VA Linux. I'm like, but it's working, right? And, like, it got us back up, right? So deal with it. Yeah.
This is my core device.
And by the way, you're not, your parent company is VA Linux, but you're the open source development network. You know, actually, we were Andover.net at the time, but, you know.
I'm on the stack.
Would it be possible, do you think, for like ABC and to write the right startup into experience?
ABC would be a bit hard, yeah. Only because their staff has changed so much. I don't know anybody over there anymore. But at PalTalk, that would, I think that they would jump at the chance to write a testimonial. Because Perry, the CTO, is like phenomenally happy with FreeBSD now that they're using it. So.
Well, that's one thing I run into it. I have to do reference Solaris with my bike, but I'm also having to do Red Hat. Apparently, it's Linux on crack. And
no, it's Linux on Quaaludes. Forget the crack. Crack is good. Crack is speed. We don't, you know, no, it's on Quaaludes. But yeah.
But a lot of times the stuff is like, can we do this? I have to, legitimately, even if it's a better OS, I have to make a case for green than new OS.
Yes, and you need a test case. You need people testimonials. You need people to say it performs better in this situation. I've run into that,
yeah.
And I think the only reason people have ever listened to me is because of my experience doing it. But it's difficult, and yeah, I mean, I could have Perry write something. We could put it on a website, you know, and whatnot. I'm sure that would be fine.
You should write something up about.
You think I should?
I think it's a good idea.
Or we could do there's always that, you know. I mean, the whole thing is I've got the Slashdot connection still, so theoretically, you know, we could go through that, but you know, CTOs don't read Slashdot, so you know. Well, some of them do. Mine does,
yeah.
You know. But you know,
most don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I could write up something. I used to write for Open Magazine, and that was so I've done a lot of stuff like this. I did a piece on BSD and biotech at one point. It went over pretty well, you know, so. That just assumes that between being a parent, being sick, and, you know, stuff like that I can actually get around to writing it. But,
yeah.
You know, George will bother me until I actually do it, so. Sort of like this meeting.
It's 2 years in the making.
Anything else? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard now, but it wasn't then. There was a standard 3-tier architecture. They had a load balancer in front of it. At the time, it was an arrow point. And in front of the arrow points, we had two FreeBSD IPFW bridges. Essentially, they were sat smack on the line between us and Exodus at the time. And behind that, there was, you know, your web servers. And behind the web servers was, you know, your database servers. So, oh God, there were a couple hundred there because it wasn't just Slashdot. It was Slashdot. It was, God, what were all the sites? We did NewsForge. We did ThinkGeek. We did, I mean, it was so many different sites. We had a couple hundred machines there. Not all of them. I mean, there were 10 machines running Slashdot. You know, and there were one standby database, one main database. It was a quad. God, what was it at the time where they were like Pentium 2 400s or whatever, 450s? They weren't. At the time, by today's standards, they were slow machines, but at the time they were pretty blazingly fast, you know. I'll tell you, from the day we went live with that setup, as opposed to the 3 machines that they had running up in Michigan, it was the performance just was amazing. You know, because I don't know if you remember, there was a day Slashdot was never available in the early days, and then all of a sudden it just started working again. Well, you know, there you go. That was actually an interesting thing because that wasn't a network hack. That was actually that was an application hack. It was a SQL injection thing, and it was It was a very interesting slash code bug. It didn't affect the network. They didn't get into the, you know, but they were able to alter the slash dot tables, you know, which got fixed really fast, but it happened, you know. Luckily, that wasn't on me, you know. It was actually very interesting because we had several companies come and audit the network during that time, specifically network and system stuff, not application-based stuff. And we scored very high, but we also had a top-notch network staff at the time. I mean, I pretty much hand-picked my network staff. And so I picked, and at the time, because we were such a well-known entity, you know, hand-picking my staff was very easy. So, anything else? Okay. I think we're going to wrap up, George.
Java-related.
What?
Java-related.
What, you liked it?
I don't know.
Hey,
I got a big
mic. Yeah.
Does anybody else have any other questions or anything? All right. I guess again, we're going to copper.